Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends, and welcome to the World Transform. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At the World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this astounding future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am amazing and super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I am doing great also. Looking forward to another amazing Wednesday show. This is the day of the week that we've sort of allotted to do our out-and-out optimistic, here's the cool stuff that's happening, you know, throughout the throughout the world, and it looks like it's another great one we got lined up here.
Oh, we got some fun stuff here, and that's right. It's our gift to the listeners, our gift to the world, really. You know, middle of the week, you're bogged down. You think, well, we'll ever get to the weekend? Well, here it is, folks. Okay, every Wednesday, we're offering up amazing stuff. Okay. Every week, that's our pledge to you, is to show you that not only is there some cool stuff going on there out there, but there's some absolutely amazing stuff going on out there. And you know what? I would have thought
I was just going to say, if the audience happens to be in the mood for something a little less optimistic, listen to last night's show. You know,
listen to Tuesday's show. We were, I think we're doing the bookends here for sure.
That's right.
Tuesday's show was very much a hey, let's be cautious. And tonight we're all about, what we're about is amazing engineering. Disruptive technologies are transforming everything. And I hope we've got some good examples that that back up the everything case. But we'll see by the time we get to the end. We've got a lot of ground to cover, so let's jump in. We'll start with this story. Augmented reality market worth $117.4 billion U.S. dollars and virtual reality market worth $33.9 billion by 2022. So this is a market watch, and this is just market predictions for where these technologies are going. So you actually have to read one step beyond what they're saying to get to the amazing part. But let me tell you, Stephen, if in 6 years we're living in a world that has a $34 billion virtual reality market, we're living in a world where virtual reality is touching our lives consistently.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, is that fair to say? And look how much bigger the augmented reality market is, according to their prediction. I mean, if I read that right, augmented reality, by the market prediction, is just going to be a fact of life for all of us at that point.
Well, was it in The Graduate where Dustin Hoffman's character was advised, you know, it's plastics. You know?
Plastics. I got one word for you. Yeah.
Yeah, plastics. One word, plastics. Well, I guess we got two words for anyone that's graduating college today. You know, virtual reality.
Yeah.
Maybe
based on these numbers, I'd say augmented reality.
I think that there's
the near term.
I agree with this. I think augmented reality is going to be more important than virtual reality. Augmented reality is a overlay of, you know, the things that we want to know over the world that we're walking around in, right? So I mean, it allows us to continue living in this world, but with the data and the intelligence of the virtual world overlaid on it. So yeah, I tend to agree with this that augmented reality will be even more important than virtual reality.
I think so. I think at least economically, and at least in terms of day to day. Now we may reach a point where virtual reality becomes more important than augmented reality. But at that point, that means probably virtual reality has become more important than reality in some sense. And that's a kind of a post-singularity future. But in the short term, what I see from this is that in the very near future, we are going to be interacting with machines in our environment in a way that we never have before. We're going to be taking in information in ways that we haven't before, and the world is going to become a computer interface basically for us. And essentially our interactions with the real world are going to become these data transactions, these data interactions. And it's almost hard to get your head around, well, how different can it be? Because it's like we're online all the time, we're always jacked in, we're always reading messages, we're always connected. But this is going to be a whole nother level, isn't it?
Right. I mean, this sort of thing would just absolutely take over, wouldn't it? I mean, and to some extent, I think that we're already seeing the beginnings of it. I mean, we've talked about the problems that you walk into a restaurant. It's a fancy restaurant. It's it's a romantic atmosphere, and half the people in the restaurant are on their cell phones. Right.
Right.
We're already seeing the beginnings of this. People locked in to the data world, perhaps too much already. I think that this trend will continue in part because of the usefulness of the intelligence that it will provide. We'll find it indispensable, and therefore we'll become closer and closer tied to it, even more so than today. So, is that a good thing? Well, I don't, good or bad. I think it'll probably be a mixed bag, but it'll have to be more good than it is bad, or we won't do it. And
And
I think that we will do it because it will be more good than bad. So.
Oh, I think we'll do it. Well, to me, what was great about this story was this wasn't even really a technology prediction. This is just a market prediction. Smart money is on augmented reality becoming this very pervasive force.
Right.
Like people who know where to put their money are saying, "Yep, that's where it's going to be." So I think they probably know something about it, and I think they're probably right. It's not like we're going to have to sit around and say, well, should we do this or not? It will be so compelling. The reasons for doing it will make so much sense that that we will adopt this as easily as we switch to smartphones, right? As easily as we started using the internet. It's,
well,
I think it's
2022
is change.
Yeah, 2022 is just around the corner. I mean,
exactly.
We're talking about something that's this particular prediction here is just saying, hey, it's the next thing. It's
right.
It's in fact, it's already in the works, and you get ready, here it comes. So I agree. I think it's we see things like the Oculus Rift and less successful things, even early attempts like Google Glass and other things like that. But it's coming. It's just coming. So
it's on its way, absolutely, and it's going to be absolutely amazing. Okay, we got several more of these. We don't want to give anything a short shrift today, so we'll just keep moving on. More amazing. We can't call it that because that was a different show. But here's some more amazing stuff. I'm just using the phrase generally. Nanomaterials could double efficiency of solar cells by converting waste heat into usable energy. Well, we're always talking about how solar is kind of this lurking presence on the energy horizon. That's only now are people starting to recognize how huge solar is about to become. And then you see something like this, and you go, well, I'm not even sure if this piece of it has been figured into people's calculations of how soon we're going to be using solar.
Yeah, A lot of times when people talk about solar, they're just talking about normal advances to photovoltaic. I mean, they're not even thinking about things like this that is taking the waste heat and turning that into usable energy. If you double the efficiency of solar cells, and solar cells are already reaching parity with grids in some sunnier places of the United States already. If you have solar cells that are already there now and you double their efficiency, is there going to be any place in the United States that that the grid would be cheaper? I'm not sure at that point.
Exactly. I mean, we know that solar power technology is on an exponential arc. But I'm not even sure that arc considers this. you know, and right. You look at that and you go, well, okay, yeah, carbon nanotubes technology here really has the potential to maybe it's just get us there quicker. Maybe that's ultimately kind of what it means. Because I guess probably when we were talking to someone like Ray Kurzweil, and he was telling us how soon and how big solar was going to be, he was ultimately probably talking about a future where we'd be using nanotech for everything, and he probably was considering that we'd be converting waste heat into solar
energy. Yeah, if anyone was considering these sorts of things, it would be Ray Kurzweil. But
yeah.
But I think by and large, people were not. But there are going to be things like this that, you know, a black swan, basically, that's a good black swan that allows some of these technologies to take off in ways we hadn't considered before. So, very
absolutely. Anyway, love the idea, and it's going to be great to see this unfold. Looking forward to it's going to be great in a few years when we're just going to be talking rearview mirror about how solar took over, right? will there be a day when we go, hey, this is it, the solar thing happened, or will we just not even notice because it's just going to creep up on us so subtly, you know? I wonder.
Yeah, I wonder too. Yeah.
We shall see. All right, let's keep moving. We got lots more fascinating and amazing stuff to talk about here. How about this? China unveils elevated bus that passes over cars on the highway. Now, Stephen, I know you saw the video on this one. I did too. What do you make of this? This is a concept vehicle where the bus is, as it says, elevated, and it's riding on kind of these rails surrounding either one or both lanes of a highway. And so the cars who may be stuck in traffic below it, and it's just sliding right over them. What do you think of this idea?
I think it's a great idea, provided there's one safety thing put into effect that I don't see with this particular model. So what I'm looking at here is a picture of this elevated bus in model form, okay?
Yep.
Some scale model of it. And you see a line of cars that it's passing over, one line of cars is passing over, and then right next to it is a line of cars that's passing next to it. You see the same picture,
yep.
I'm sure, Bill.
Yep, yeah, I'm looking at the same picture.
Why is this dangerous? This is dangerous because if you're a car that changes lanes, you can change lanes right into this bus that you didn't even know was in the world because it's passing over you, right? So what do you do about that to make it safe? Well, you put up concrete barriers. These are lanes that you can't get out of. You have to enter and exit like with a ramp or something. And the elevated bus rides on top of those concrete barriers. That's the way you make that safe. And would it work? Absolutely, it'll work. Would it be a speedier option?
How is that different from like having a light rail, right, running down the same? Because I see that in Denver and a lot of cities, they have that. Right?
Well,
an
elevated rail, you have a it just makes an unattractive street, doesn't it? I mean, if you're you've probably ridden under an elevated rail line.
I'm not talking elevated. I'm just saying that, you know, there'll be like the streetcars and, you know, it's like cars and trolleys and trains are all like occupying the same space, right? And people do sometimes change lanes right in front of a train, I guess. You know, it must happen sometimes, but they don't necessarily put barricades up. They have one road. And you just got to, you know, it's like you have to watch out for the trains the same way you're watching out for cars. You don't think that people would, I mean, because this thing's huge, right? It would be kind of hard to miss.
Right. Well, I guess that people could learn to watch for it. But I just like my concrete barrier idea. It's just
I'm not saying it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
I understand what you're saying. So if you're in a lane covered by the bus, you can't easily jump out of that lane, nor can somebody easily jump in.
Yeah, you have to wait for like an exit lane, an exit spot to get, you know, to get out from under the lanes that the bus travels over.
The other thing you would have to have, the thing that occurred to me that you would have to have for a system like this to really work is you would need for there to be truly well-regulated, enforced rules against any high-profile vehicles, right? Because this bus is only going to be able to pass over a car or maybe an SUV at the tallest, right? Even a
when you enter the entrance lane for these particular lanes, and it could be like HOV lanes, you know, these particular lanes, they're faster, higher speed lanes. And when you enter it, there'd be like a barrier above, you know, a max height. Here's your max height right here.
Yeah,
and
if you strike that barrier with your car, you're already not going in. Yeah, exactly. That's right.
That's how you handle that. And if you're a big truck or something, you can't get under there. I think it would work. I think you could foresee the problems that it would be, and you could manage those problems. And it takes the big buses off the roads. At least in a way, they're off the roads, right? They're above the road. You're occupying the same physical space, but in a way that's, you know, your footprint's almost zero, and you could travel fast, and you can transport a lot of people.
All the advantage of that elevated rail system without a lot
the
of
the eyesore of the elevated track.
Yeah, well, those can be pretty or whatever, but I mean, you know, the thing is that's real expensive. You have to put it in this whole separate infrastructure. Here you don't. I mean, the thing itself is sort of a piece of infrastructure. But the other great thing is you could have as many of these running as you needed, right?
Once you got the track for it or whatever it is, you'd put as many on the road as you wanted. So,
yeah, I think it's a fantastic idea, and it goes to show you there are still some simple solutions out there waiting to be thought of. You know, it's like, how do we make better use of this space? Well, it's like you make vertical use of this space. Well, how do you make vertical use of this space? Oh, you build a train. Well, not necessarily, right? Here's a completely outside the box solution that I think that I think could really work. And
they call it an elevated bus.
Like,
mm-hmm. They're calling it an elevated bus. I really think that you would call this a train. It's a species of train because it can't, you know, it can't just drive anywhere it wants to. It's on a track, so. It's a species of train in my idea,
in my
way of thinking. It's an elevated train without an elevated track. It's elevated all on its own. It's interesting.
Fair enough.
Like you say,
whatever you call it,
it's
pretty cool, and it's different from it's a novel solution to that problem, and I really admire that. Okay, let's move on. We've got more amazing engineering going on here. Let's take it in a completely different direction now. From mass transit to individual personal transportation, face-controlled wheelchair without sensor mounted on face. So this is this just shows you how far we've come anyway. That they make that clarification. There are already face-controlled wheelchairs. There are already wheelchairs that you can control by your facial expressions, by your facial movements, and you can get yourself around. So we're talking, you know, quadriplegic, right? We're talking about people who truly, you know, don't have any motor capability to get themselves around. If they can move their faces, they can move their wheelchair. Well, as it has existed up to this point, that requires having some infrastructure in place that's going to monitor what your face is doing. It's going to track that down, and then it's going to turn that into instructions. Even that is a miracle, right, and a huge breakthrough. But this is talking about something that's even one step past that, isn't it?
That's right. It monitors you, you know, it's interesting. You see eye movements controlling this wheelchair. Guy sticks his tongue out and it stops. You know, whatever, and it could be, and it would have to be programmed for whatever the limitations are of the person who uses the system. It can work around those limitations. You know, if the person's only able to move this part of their body, it could work with that. You know, And I think that's fantastic to allow people mobility. You know, people like Stephen Hawking. You can just imagine how something like this would allow them to have more independence, and that's a wonderful thing.
I think so too. Yeah, I mean, it's a nice step in the direction. Before we have the technology just to get these people back on their feet, which I think we'll have in time, to give anyone who doesn't have mobility as much mobility as those of us who are, you know, blessed with the ability to walk around. It's just, you know, it's a fantastic goal. And you have to be deprived of that at some point in your life to really grasp even a little bit what it means not to be able to move yourself around, you know, to be stuck, or to have to rely on someone else's help, or even just to be in a situation where everybody else can move and you just barely can, or can't do everything, everything that they can. This is just one part of a whole series of developments that are occurring right now that move us in that direction. And I think this is a really important one because it takes away some of that like added baggage, that infrastructure that had to be in place, the sensor being in place to read people's facial expressions. Now we're just gonna, you know, we're just gonna catch them on the fly, and we're gonna get people to where they need to be. Yeah, it's great for people like Stephen Hawking, and great for thousands of people whose names you've never heard of, who also just desperately want that independence in their lives, and here they are, one step closer to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, like I say, another amazing development. Okay, something that's that could potentially be pretty amazing for anyone who's ever had a flat, right? That's our next story. It's airless tires make flats a thing of the past. You don't have to worry about bad roads ever again. And these tires are pretty interesting looking, Phil. It's like almost a honeycomb pattern that absorbs shocks like a tire that has air in it, but it can't go flat, can it?
Right. Yeah. You know, I mean, presumably you could, you know, you could wear down the tread and you could destroy it. I mean, you could, you know.
Right. Yeah. Eventually.
You could wreck it, but you're not going to puncture it and lose air. And my car currently, the latest set of tires I bought are tires that you can run flat. Which I don't get that. I'm like, well, then why don't I just let the air out and I'll just run them like that all the time? You know, obviously it's not a great idea to go around.
Basically,
with it like
it's good enough to get you to the shop without you having to get out, you know, get the jack out and replace the tire. It's enough to get you somewhere. But, yeah, you wouldn't want to run it flat all the time.
But I've always wondered, I mean, for years I've wondered, why isn't this an option? You know, why hasn't someone figured out a way that we're not relying on balloons, basically.
High pressure, you know, I mean, you put something under high pressure, and, you know, that's an opportunity for failure built in, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
It,
you know,
it seems to me obvious that that we could do something else. You know, I think of things like, you know, that little dune buggy we had on the moon. They obviously, under those circumstances, you had to have some other option other than aired tires, because on the moon you can't, you know, there's nothing pushing back against that air, and so if you had air tires on the moon, you'd have had four blowouts immediately. But
there have been military vehicles and others that use like solid rubber tires. Like, I mean, I remember my first tricycle, the front tire on it was just solid rubber. You know, there was no air in there. It was just a solid piece of rubber, and you see that has been used over the years, but. You know, there's a lot of drawbacks to that approach, but I've always wondered if there wasn't, you know, something in between that would work. And to me, this one, it feels a lot like the story before last, the one about the train or bus that rides over the cars. It's like it's a simple idea that somebody could have thought of a long time ago. Now, maybe, no doubt, it's easier to implement today because we've just got so many, you know, better technology choices around how we do things. But I look at this honeycomb tire and I say somebody could have done this 50 years ago, right? I mean, this is not a thing that we had to live in the 21st century for somebody to come up with this, but it just took till now till somebody is making it happen. Or it could be, ironically, that somebody did come up with it a long time ago and it just hasn't got on yet, and maybe now it's on its second wind, as it were.
I'm sure various things have been tried over the years, I'm sure, but I'm sure the drawbacks in the past were that it would just beat you to death. If you had a solid rubber tire, you know, that would, you know, you just couldn't, no suspension could make up for the fact that there was no air in your tires. If you were to hit a pothole, it would rattle you to the core. Something like this.
I mean, you're enforcing
like
buggy days at that point, right? You might as well have those iron wheels, right?
Buckboard that would, you know, yeah, and you better be ready for a herniated disc or something, because it's going to beat you to death. But it was this sort of thing, you know, looks to get it would give the same way when rolling over rocks. That's the picture I'm looking at here, as a tire with air in it, because it in a sense it is a tire with air in it, because it's these cells, these open honeycomb cells have air inside of them.
That's
and
right.
And as these cells are deformed. Because they push back, but they also absorb some too.
It's making use of air without that air pressure problem, without that risk of deflation. Right, this thing you can't deflate
right.
it because it's not inflated. It's just using air at normal pressure. It's a great solution.
I appreciate why they used an open wheel here so we could see the honeycombs underneath. But I wonder, Phil, if once these hit the road. If they don't have some sort of sidewall on them.
Oh, they probably would,
You know.
You wouldn't get to see it. It wouldn't look as cool as it.
Yeah. Because, I mean, come on. It looks like a thing that would just catch dirt and sling it up on your car or something.
Think about the soles of your shoes when you walk through mud. You wouldn't want to drive that honeycomb thing through mud and then have all that stuck to you. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, just slinging all over your car. I think definitely that would be enclosed. But it's a neat idea.
You know
idea.
What I would suggest? And, just me. White walls. You know? Time to bring those down.
Yeah, it's past time.
I'm throwing that out there. Okay, moving. We got to move quickly on. We got one more, I think, one more amazing engineering topic. And this is a great one. A lot of these are things it's amazing engineering and it's disruptive technologies, but it's things that have kind of been in the backs of our minds for a while. Right, the things that we thought, well, you know, something like this maybe could work. I've been thinking about this last one ever since I started hearing about stem cell therapy, and it's simply this. Scientists use lasers to regrow teeth from stem cells. Yes, right? This is where dentistry, this is the direction that dentistry needs to be going in the 21st century. Imagine if a trip to the dentist to treat a cavity didn't involve a filling, root canal, or crown. What if a simple light treatment could actually get your teeth to regrow themselves using stem cells? I mean, this is the beauty of stem cell therapy, right? People, and you think about all the damage that gets done to their teeth and all the pain they go through, and they lose their teeth, and they got dentures, and they, you know, crown. I've got crowns. My head's full of crowns. You know, you got all these old fillings. What if we could just grow our teeth back, right? And
right.
It turns out with stem cells. Yeah, that ultimately that truly is an option, and I look at this and go, it's just a matter of time. I would pull half the teeth out of my head and just grow new ones. I mean, not all at once, clearly, but
over a period of time. Well, a few years ago, we were hearing dentists say, "Hey, we can take stem cells and regrow a root, and if we got a root, that's good enough. We just cap it and got a great tooth, and that's great." This, I think, is you're using you do the same thing with stem cells to get a root started, but apparently the lasers sort of form the tooth or create the framework for the tooth to grow into or something like that. Of course, my comment when you posted this on Facebook was, you know, I want a dentist with freaking laser beams to regrow my teeth, right?
That's right. It's the one thing I ever asked for. Yeah. And you can't even give me a dentist with a laser beam. Yeah,
that's right. So I think that's what's happening here is that the laser is it's just the next step after using stem cells to grow roots. This allows us to grow the whole tooth now.
Yeah, the laser is stimulating something called dentin, which is actually making the enamel grow back. So you're getting the full tooth, not just the root. And with that, Stephen, can you believe it? Once again, we're out of time. It always happens whenever we start talking about amazing things on Amazing Wednesday. And you know what? We're going to be back again next week with this many, if not more, amazing things to talk about. So you got that to look forward to, as well as coming up on Friday, we've got an all-geek, other geek show. So join us. We're going to talk some superhero movies and other geeky topics. Be with us. We can't do it without you. And until next time, live to see it.